ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ गणानां त्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमम् ज्येष्ठराजम् ब्रह्मणाम् ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन्नोतिभिः सीदसादनम् श्रीमहागणाधिपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। नारायणम् नमस्कृत्य नरम् चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। आत्मस्वरूप बन्धुगण, सो टुडे वी विल स्टार्ट वित् द वर्स 56। यू मे से इट विथ मी। दुःखेषु अनुद्विग्नमनाः सुखेषु विगतस्पृहः वीतराग भयक्रोधः स्थितधीः मुनिरुच्यते। सो वी आर ट्राइंग टू अंडरस्टैंड द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ ए सेज ऑफ स्टेबल विस्डम, that is the sthita prajna, a sage or saint of stable wisdom. So the wisdom must be stable. It should not be like coming like a flash and disappearing. That won't serve any useful purpose. Of course it serves a purpose to the extent that we know there is something like that, and so it may put us on its course one day. To that extent it will be useful. But unless the wisdom is stable in the sense, it becomes a part of our personality. This is what I like to say this way. There should be no conflict between light and life. Light is knowledge. Life is a series of activities. There should be no conflict between the two. You know in one way and act exactly the opposite way. So that is splitting the personality, and that is not good for the growth of the person. That causes a lot of conflict in the person's heart. This is how conflict is generated. We know one thing and we act exactly the opposite way, and so that settles down as a conflict and it grows, and that makes life very disturbing. So there should be a correlation between what we know and what we act, what we do. So this is what is called sthita prajna. And we are talking of a jnani who is a sthita dhihi. Sthita prajna or sthita dhihi, one and the same. Dhi is prajna. Then here the word munihi is also mentioned. Munihi uchyate. Muni means a sage, as I already told. But then people have a particular concept about a sage. When I say muni in Sanskrit, people who know Sanskrit word, they too have the same concept. When I translate it as in English as sage, again this concept comes, namely that a sage is one who lives in isolated places like a cave in Himalayas, etc., totally isolated or secluded from the society, social interactions, and who has a flowing big white beard, etc. So that kind of a picture comes into our mind. So that is not correct. Such a person may be a sage, but a sage is not necessarily to be like that. Munihi, a sage, means a person who has the contemplative nature. That is the meaning of the word munihi. So mananat munihi. So suppose a desire comes in the mind, a thought comes in the mind, then two things can happen. One, you run behind the thought, you run after the thought, just pursue it. Or that is not a wise thing to do, that is not the way to live, because all kinds of meaningless thoughts cross the mind. And every time a thought crosses the mind, you just run behind it or you just pursue it, then you are totally into the world. That is how we enter into the world. There is no world, we talk of a physical world. But then you think about it, there is no physical world or any such thing other than your mind. Your mind is the world that you are talking about. Mind is another name for the world in which you live. It is to that extent one and the same. Anyway, so if a given thought is there, it crosses the mind and you just pursue it. That is how you run behind the things of the world. That is how a very useful human life is wasted. That is not the way to do it. On the other hand, when a thought crosses the mind, you have a space with reference to it. That means you are alert with reference to that thought. And you have the final say with reference to the content of that thought, whether to pursue that thought or to just reject that thought. Because, you know, a thought gains strength from you. This is one very interesting thing. Suppose I am hurt. I say I am hurt. What is this hurt? Hurt is nothing but the sense of hurt. In fact, there is no other hurt than the sense of hurt. So I feel that I am hurt. That is what the hurt is. And so this hurt is there. It happens in the mind. Now immediately I become sad. I develop ill will towards the other person who caused this hurt. This is how I pursue that thought. That means I do not have any say in the matter. I do not have any mastery over the thought. So mind presents a thought before me and I become a victim of that thought. That is not the correct thing. When a hurt, the idea of hurt crosses the mind, so on the other hand, I look at it like a neutral witness and I have that kind of a space with reference to that thought and then I realize that this idea of hurt is just meaningless. Once I notice that there is nothing like real hurt, it is all my imagination. In fact, the fact is, you are hurt only to the extent you allow other person to hurt you. Finally, you are hurting yourself through the other person. That is how it is. So once I know this fact and I refuse to be hurt, I am not going to be hurt by what the other person says or does. So I refuse to be hurt. Then this idea of hurt which crosses the mind, it has no strength. All ideas or all thoughts, they become strong, overpowering, overwhelming, only when you identify with them. If you refuse to identify with a given thought or a concept or an idea, that thought or idea, it has no strength to stand on itself, by itself, and hence it disappears. It lingers a little around and then it disappears. You hold on to it, then it acquires the entire strength of your personality. You see, some people, they pursue a hate till the end of their life. So that means the entire person, the person has infinite power because he is after all the Atma. And so essentially he is the source of infinite power. And so when this I am, which is the source of infinite power, goes and identifies with a given thought, then that thought, whether it is good or bad, it gets all the power of the personality, all the power of I am. Whereas if the I am remains dissociated from the thought as a witness in terms of that space which we talk about, then the thought is powerless. It has no existence even. It just appears for a while like a scene on the movie screen and then disappears. So Munihi is one who has such a mastery over the thought process. Sthitadhihi Munihi Uchyate. Such a person is generally very sober, very stable, and not swayed by circumstances. So, and very contemplative person, he has, he establishes a contact or a connectedness with the deeper personality, the deeper dimension of the personality. So such a person is called Munihi. So you can be a Muni too. In fact, by studying Gita, you are trying to become a Muni. That is how it is. So that contemplative attitude is what is called Munitvam or Munibhavaha, the status of a Muni. And then the word Muni is also understood in a way, in a different way. All are related. Just we approach the matter from various perspectives. All are interrelated. You see, whose mind is relatively calm, such a person is called Munihi. Maunat Munihi. The silence of the mind, when we talk of mauna, we are not talking of closing the lips. Closing the lips, it doesn't mean anything. In fact, you can keep a bunch of cards and one or two pencils before you and go on writing instructions and passing on the instructions. Without opening the mouth, you can pass on the instructions. People sit before this website and they don't talk. They are very calm. Into the midnight, they are busy with the website. So that is not maunam. Maunam is the silence of thoughts. Silence of the mind is maunam. So, just keeping the mouth shut is not maunam. But if keeping the mouth shut helps to acquire that silence of the mind, then it becomes a discipline called maunam. That way it could be useful. Because, you know, people have a pressure to talk. That is there. So, that pressure to talk, that means the person is now talking due to that pressure. So, that reflects a mind in hyperactivity. So, if you want to reduce the activity of the mind, you can start it with the speech. So you reduce the speech purposefully. Accordingly, the mind also gets more calm. So that way you can use it as a discipline. But mauna, the silence that we are talking of here, Munihi, a silent person, there we are talking of the silence of the mind. And we talk of peace and happiness. You have peace and happiness in life. This happiness is different from pleasure. Pleasure is something, a distraction it is. Pleasure is not desirable. Whereas happiness, which is beyond both pleasure and pain, we will come to that. So that is the desirable state of mind. So the happiness and peace of mind are synonymous to silence of the mind. A mind in silence is a mind in peace, and that state of the mind is happiness. So, when the thoughts of the mind are curtailed or reduced, that means the mind becomes calm, then you get connected to your inner being. It is like tapping the source. It is like tapping groundwater. If you want to tap groundwater, you don't go on digging one hole after another hole all over the place. If you dig a small hole and then dig another hole, then dig another hole, like that you dig 20 holes or 100 holes or 1,000 holes, you are not going to get one drop of water. You just dig at one place continuously, ignoring the entire area. So similarly, the silence of the mind helps you to get connected with the inner being, which is the only reality in this creation. Therefore, such a person who knows how to get established in the silence of the mind is called Munihi. We also talk of a solitude. Solitude, suppose you sit alone and go on thinking about all kinds of things, that is not solitude. Better to be in the company of people, that will be better. So it is not a question of sitting alone. Solitude is not loneliness. So you are in the company of people. You can be in solitude in the company of people. Or you can be very much in the company of people when you are lonely also. So because you sit alone and go on thinking about all the other family members, how they caused all kinds of problems to you, and the friends and other relatives, etc. You go on thinking about all those things. Then you are not in solitude. Solitude, silence, and peace of mind, they are all unhappiness. These are all the same, they constitute the same state of mind. And a person who has such a mind is called Munihi. And only such a Muni can be a Sthita Prajna. Sthitadhihi Munihi Uchyate. Yesterday I was talking about the glory of Bhagavad Gita as a dictionary of human life, human psychology. It's not dictionary, encyclopedia. It is an encyclopedia of human psychology. And that too, not a topical psychology, a very fundamental psychology is discussed here with reference to the ultimate goal of life. So the psychology of human being is discussed with such a goal in mind, the ultimate goal of life, which is realization of one's own oneness with the whole, that is with the God or Godhead, whatever. That is the ultimate goal of life. And so Gita's psychology has that goal in view. Also, Gita's psychology has the premise of one's essential nature of a conscious being. Essentially, a person, Purusha, is a being, existence, because you don't need the proof of your existence in any way. Whereas, the proof for the existence of any other object, you need the proof. For example, when you say flower, you mean flower is. You are talking of the existence in the form of flower. And this existence, flower is, it requires the evidence of senses and mind. Whereas, your existence, I am, it doesn't require any senses and mind. In fact, senses and mind come later. First, I am is there. Only when I am is there, so the pramata, the knower, comes and the status of a knower comes to I am later. First, I am is there. So, I am is a self-evident existence. And you are that self-evident existence. You are the knowledge of existence. That is what you are, Satchit. And from that standpoint, the psychology has to be understood. Then the psychology has a meaning. It connects you, it establishes a connectedness with your own innermost being. And that kind of a psychology can take you to the highest goal of human life. So that is the very special feature of Gita psychology. In this, why I said like this, because, you know, in Gita, Lord Shri Krishna, in the very beginning, he broaches this subject of pleasure and pain, sukha, dukkha. Because, you know, if human life can be described as, in many ways it can be described. When you ask what is human life, it can be answered in minimum dozen ways. It all depends upon the perspective or a point of view or a standpoint. So in one context, human life can be described as a relentless cycle of pleasure and pain. That is what human life is. So, you have pleasure, which is like a flash, and then you have pain, which continues for a while, and then you have another flash of pleasure, and then a continuous pain later. So, like this, we have flashes of pleasure in between, with pain really maintaining the background all the while. So, like this, we have a cycle of pleasure and pain. So, they alternate. Pleasure and pain alternate. Of course, pain stays for a longer time in life than pleasure. So, this is how human life is. That is how it is. And so, it continues. If you say, I am fed up with pleasure as well as pain, it is all right. Everybody is fed up. But then there seems to be no solution to that. It appears that only sleep is a solution. In sleep, this cycle of pleasure and pain, it comes to a halt. And so in sleep, that's why people, they yearn for sleep so much. They make so much of a preparation for dropping off. So, what is sleep? Sleep is a complete annihilation of what all you like or love, including your own body, senses and mind, and yourself. Everything comes to zero, comes to a naught. And yet, that is what we yearn for most in life. The reason is, this is a person who is in a pleasurable situation also goes for sleep, he wants sleep, and a person in pain, of course he wants sleep, so that he can put an end to this pain. So, the sleep happens to be a kind of break for this cycle of pleasure and pain. But the moment you come out of sleep, the cycle starts rolling. And this continues till the person falls dead. So this is the cycle of pleasure and pain. That is what life is. And in Sanskrit, the words for pleasure and pain are sukha and dukkha. The language is very characteristic of the psychology because the language is an etymological language. The words, you see, pleasure and pain, though they start with P, same syllable, there is no other connection between the words. Whereas in sukha and dukkha, both are kha. One is sukha, the other is duhu kha. Dur kha or duhu kha. Kha is weather, I tell you. Kha is nothing but weather. So kha is akasha. Akasha space. You see, you cannot see space. Space is not available for sense organs. Only weather is available for sense organs. So there is a weather space under. There is weather which manifests in space. Weather cannot exist on mountain tops or inside the houses. It has to manifest in wide space only. Now, when it is a good weather, then you can say a very pleasant sky. So that is sukha. Su means good weather. Kha is weather. And when the weather is bad, like inclement weather like now, so we say it is duhu kha. Now you substitute weather with mind. That is what we have. There is mind's space. Mind is also space, I tell you. It's a very special kind of space. So you need space to have houses, buildings, roads, people, all kinds of things. You need space. So this space is called physical space, bhuta akasha. And in that physical space, you have good weather, bad weather. Good weather is sukha, bad weather is dukkha. And then there is a mental space, because you experience all the objects of the world in the mind only. Suppose you talk of an electron. Now you think of an electron. Now where is this electron? It is in the mind's space. Then you talk of a mountain. Where is it? It is again in the mind's space. If you talk of a planet, it is again in the mind's space. Therefore, so there is a space called mental's, mind's space. And there can be a good weather in the mind's space, or there can be bad weather. You cannot ask for continuous good weather. You cannot ask for it. It is not wise to ask for such a situation. I will be happy only when the weather is sunny all the time. If that is your desire, then you are going to be disappointed straight away. Better not to entertain such a desire, especially in Pennsylvania. So, if the weather is good in Pennsylvania, you have to wait for 5 minutes. And if the weather is bad in Pennsylvania, you have to wait for 5 minutes. So, you just cannot invest your happiness or your comfort in the weather. You should not do that mistake. So some people do this mistake. It's a psychology that develops upon the person which is not desirable. He looks around, he looks outside the window and sees the weather is not very nice. It's an inclement weather. And immediately he starts cursing. There are certain words of cursing. and he starts using those words, and he starts cursing in general. The curse is not particularly aimed at a particular person or any such thing. It is just a curse which is just left into the space. It may go and it may be addressed to the God, or it may be addressed to the weather god or weather man, whatever. So a curse is released. So while releasing a curse, you are hurting yourself. That is what happens. So people, when I see them cursing and also stamping on the ground, oh, what a useless weather like that. He stamps on the ground. So he is preparing his mind in the wrong direction. That is not the process of growth. You may say it is very insignificant thing. Yes, it is insignificant, all right, but it reflects a deeper psychology, which is not good. So Gita starts with this psychology of pleasure and pain in the very beginning itself. In fact, even now I never stop getting amazed at a particular verse where Bhagavan connects our attitude towards this cycle of pleasure and pain with the highest goal of human endeavor. Like he says, Yamhinav Yathayantyete, in the very beginning he says, almost immediately after starting the teaching, he finds it necessary to mention this. So you can imagine the importance given to that concept. He says, Yamhinav Yathayantyete, Purusham Purusharshabha, Samadukha Sukham Dhiram, Somru Tattvaya Kalpate. You see, Gita's goal in life, the goal in life as it is presented by Gita, is not some comfortable, cozy lifestyle. That is not the goal. That is presented as a means only, if at all. The goal is to realize ultimately one's oneness with the whole. That is the goal. And as long as you take yourself to be the physical body, of course, along with the senses and the mind, you are a mortal, bound to die. In fact, dying all the time. Even while we are talking, we are dying. That is how the nature works. So, we are a mortal all the time. Whereas, if you understand your true nature, you are not going to die. There is no death for you. That is the immortality that we are talking about here. Amrutatvaya kalpate. Amrutatvam is immortality, which is the moksha, the liberation from all limitations, which is the highest goal of human life, highest purushartha. So dharmartha kama moksha, the fourth one, the most important purushartha. That is the phalam, the goal for Gita's teaching also. And that goal is just brought and connected to an attitude on a daily basis of the person towards the cycle of prosperity and adversity. Therefore, it is a promise by Bhagavan, if you develop a proper attitude towards sukha and dukkha, yamhinam vyathayanti. So, vyatha, the word vyatha means, it has two meanings. One is suffering, pain, and another is fear. Vyatha, the verbal root vyatha, has got the meaning of fear. So, what happens? A prosperity comes and there is suffering and pain even in prosperity. In fact, every prosperity or a pleasurable situation, it has the seed of pain in it. That is how it is. In fact, pain happens to be the price that you have to pay for every pleasure that you enjoy. You just can't have a pleasure without payment of price of pain for it. It is like paying bills. You enjoy electricity for a month, you have to pay its bill. You enjoy telephone communication for a month's time and then you have to pay bill. For water you have to pay bill. And for all the pleasures that you have enjoyed during that 1 month, you have to pay bill. And the bill is in the form of pain. Because all bills are pain only. They are a pain in the neck, they say. So, you have to pay the price of pain for every pleasure that you seek and enjoy. Period. No exception to that. Therefore, pain won't come from elsewhere. It won't come from stars or planets or from neighbors are from government. It comes from your attitude of seeking pleasure. It comes from there. It has its source in within as a person. Anyway, coming to the point, sama dukkha sukham. So a person who develops an equipoise attitude towards the pleasure and pain in life, that attitude, it appears to be very simple and very practical, the wise thing to do to lead a normal life, but it is not only just that, it is something much, much more than that. That attitude can take you to the highest goal of human endeavor itself, namely moksha. So samadukha sukham dhiram, such a person is a person who maintains that equipoise of mind. He is described in Gita again and again as a dhira, the courageous person. The word dhira means courageous as well as wise. In fact, courage of this kind comes from wisdom. They are interconnected. Dhiyam rati iti dhiraha. So, the developing wisdom in the mind and simultaneously courage also comes. So, this pleasure and pain, these are the two things. So here also, Bhagavan brings the topic of pleasure and pain with reference to the characteristics of sthita prajna. In fact, in Gita, in an overall view, a jnani or a man of self-knowledge, a person of self-knowledge, is described from different perspectives. In the second chapter, we have sthita prajna lakshanas. They are the characteristics of a jnani. And then in chapter 12, we have bhakta lakshanas, advesta sarva bhutanam, etc. There again the characteristics of a jnani only. There bhakta, the devotee is a jnani only. He is not a different person, same person. And again in 14th chapter we have gunatita lakshanas. So samadukha sukha swasthaha, etc. So that gunatita means one who has transcended the three gunas, satvarajastamo gunas. So there, that is again jnani. It's not that three different kinds of people are described, no. Same person is described in three different perspectives. When it comes to sthita prajna, we are in the midst of karma yoga. So from the point of view of karma yoga, a sthita prajna, a jnani is described. That is sthita prajna lakshanas. The same jnani, when viewed from the point of view of devotion towards the Lord, which is again part of the karma yoga, so that person, that description is the bhakta lakshanas. The same jnani, with reference to the three gunas, satrajastamo gunas, and his attitude towards them. So his transcending these three gunas. So when from the point of view of jnana and then the three gunas, when the same jnani is described, then we have gunatita lakshanas. The interesting situation is, Bhagavan does not leave this sukha-dukha attitude in all the three places. So he starts the teaching with equipoise towards sukha-dukha, samadukha-sukhandhiram, somrutatvaya kalpate. That is how he starts the teaching means almost immediately. The first verse is asochyananvasochastvam, then natvevahan jatunasam. Then we have matrasparshyastu kaunteya, the third verse, where the origin of sukha and dukkha, pleasure and pain, how they originate, that is described. And then comes this verse, samadukha sukham dhiram, somrutatvaya kalpate. It is in the very first paragraph of teaching. He mentions this attitude towards sukha and dukkha, and then he brings it in sthita prajna lakshanas as dukhesh manudvignamana sukhesh vigatas prohaha, and then he brings it again in bhakta lakshanas, so sama dukkha sukhaha dhiraha, etc. Again in gunatita he says sama dukkha sukhaha swastha. So you see, one, a person who is given to swaying, who is buffeted by pleasures and pains of life, that person, he lost his moorings. He lost his connectedness to his intrinsic nature of satchit. That's why he is, you see, when even Bhagavan describes like with this example, a boat which has no moorings, it is carried away in all directions by the winds. Whereas a boat which has moorings, it also faces the winds. But even while facing the winds and moving this way, that way, due to the force of the winds, yet it keeps its position intact. So this is what is called swasthaha. Samadukha sukhaha swasthaha. You see what happens to the people. A sukha, a prosperity, can dislodge them from their original nature. Or an adversity can dislodge. Anything can happen. You see, in my childhood, I used to have a friend. And we passed a high school exam. All of us attended high school exam and all of us passed it together. And then suddenly this friend has invited us for a party, a huge party, because he is a rich, they are a rich family. And so the entire village was invited for the party. What is the party? He passed the high school exam. That is the party. So we all went and enjoyed the party. For us, there was nobody to give party, etc. We anyway passed in good marks and all that, but we never thought of a party. Whereas his father has thrown a party to the village. Over. Then we all went to the college, which is nearby. The junior college, we call it. We passed the exam, whereas he failed. And that evening he came to the playground to play. His eyes were red and his cheeks were swollen. We asked him, what is the matter? His father has beaten him black and blue. Why? Because he failed the exam. So, the young man passes the exam, you throw a party to the village, and he fails, you beat him black and blue. This is what is called the wrong attitude towards the prosperity and adversity in life. This is what I have seen in very childhood. Later, when I was when I have grown, I had a friend. This friend suddenly applied leave of 10 days to the office, and I asked him, what is the matter? I am going to Goa. Goa is a kind of a resort in India. Oh, Goa, you have friends or relatives there? No, no relatives. Then what for you are going to Goa? A pleasure trip. I never knew that there could be a pleasure trip till then. Then I knew that, oh, there could be a trip. For me, trip means some work is there, therefore we go. That is how I understood. So a pleasure trip is something, there is no work to do there, but still we go there. That is for some pleasure. So he went for a pleasure trip. So there was a small envy also, what a lucky guy. He goes for a pleasure trip, and so he came back. After some time, after 6 months or so, he stopped coming to the office and a leave letter has come. Then when I inquired by phoning to his house why he did not turn up to the office, his wife told me that he is in depression. Then we all ran to his house. What is the matter? You see what happened? There was a stock market bubble that created by Harshad Mehta in Bombay. In 90s, there was a gentleman called Harshad Mehta. He manipulated the stocks in such a way that they all have risen to a meaningless heights. It's a bubble. To start with, it's a bubble. And a bubble is bound to burst. That is what a bubble is. And so, this gentleman went to Goa when this bubble was growing. That was the reason for his going to Goa pleasure trip. And that bubble has grown and it remained like that for 6 months. After 6 months, that bubble has burst. And so the bubble which took him to Goa for a pleasure trip now made him a depressed person. He gained 100,000 rupees when the bubble was growing, and so he went for a pleasure trip. Now the bubble has burst, which it has to, being a bubble, and now he is in depression. So this is what I saw in very first hand with a reference to a friend. So just I gave these two examples, how human mind can be buffeted by these vicissitudes of life, the ups and downs of life. And the spiritual growth consists in developing carefully. It cannot happen in a day or in a week or in a month. Over a period you have to develop carefully an equipoise of mind towards both prosperity and adversity. In fact, people need to develop equipoise in prosperity also. Because, as Pujya Swamiji says it quite often, our response towards the events of life is a yo-yo response. So, that means, either we are elated and become hilarious through parties. This party, the party psychology is a bad psychology because it fixes this yo-yo response in the mind of the person. At the fall of the hat, I mean, at the simplest occasion of pleasure, he asks for a party or he throws a party. And so now the psychology is ripe for the opposite situation when a little adversity comes in the way. Therefore, we are so weak in mind that we cannot face even a little unpleasant situation. Somebody says something to us that is enough, an innocuous comment made by somebody else, or a simple gesture by somebody is enough to make us sad. A little dip in stock market is enough to make us sad. Our peace and happiness is so vulnerable that a stomachache is enough to disturb it, or a stock market dip is enough to spoil it completely. It should not be so vulnerable, should not be so brittle. That happiness or whatever, your peace and happiness, it should not be so brittle. So, that's why Sri Krishna says here, dukheshu anudvignamanaha. So, udvega is the getting ruffled, so getting agitated. So, the person loses his mental balance when adversity stares in the face. The same person, when prosperity comes his way, becomes highly passionate and attached. Spruha. Spruha is a passion. So, attachment, intense attachment. So, this is the wrong response. Dukheshu udvega, sukheshu agata spruhaha. Spruha. This is the wrong response. So, this response is very bad for the psychology of the person in the long run. In fact, I tell you, this sukha and dukkha, they are not stable things. They are very fickle. A poet Kalidasa says, Nichair gachat yuparicha dasha chakranemik kramena kasyaikantam sukham upanatam dukham ekantatova Nichair gachat yuparicha dasha chakranemik kramena. You see, in villages they use a wheel to bring water from the well up. So this wheel has buckets attached to it. So the wheel is rotated. So an empty bucket goes down and picks up water and comes up. This is the chakra nemi. So if you just focus on a bucket, this bucket is an empty bucket. Now it is on the top of the wheel. Now it is going down, falling down and down and down. It falls completely down. The diameter of the wheel that determines the fall of the bucket. So that much fall it happens. And once it has fallen, it will not continue to fall further. There is a limit to the fall. And then it starts coming up. Again, it is not a limitless growth or going up. It's like a stock market bubble, I tell you. So it grows and grows and only to fall. This is the chakranemik krama. Therefore, in life also, ekanta sukham and ekanta dukham means continuous unbroken happiness, pleasure and unbroken pain, they are not there. They are not there for the richest man, and also they are not there for a poor man. They are not there for the most powerful person and also most wretched person. They are not there. So, pleasure is always intervened by pain. And pain is necessarily broken by pleasure. In fact, I tell you, you cannot withstand pain unless pleasure intervenes. Even while crying for something lost, you need a cup of coffee and some food and some nutrients to keep crying. So the pleasure has to intervene to keep the pain also. So even to be painful and unhappy and dejected for a few hours, you need some nutrition, you know, some coffee and some cookies, etc. should be there around, then only we can be painful. Mourning, they call it. They mourn. Even while mourning, they enjoy a cup of coffee and some juice, etc., other things. Some pleasure will be there always. Otherwise, the man cannot survive. Human being cannot survive. So, just it's only a matter of adjusting the attitude, that's all. In fact, we look at it from the destiny point of view, like this. You see, sukha and dukkha, now the words are familiar to you, right? Sukha is pleasure, dukkha is pain. That is how we use them. So that is the context here. So there is sukha and dukkha. Sukha and dukkha, they happen due to a cause. Nimitta, we call it. Sukha nimitta. The cause for sukha is there, therefore sukha comes. The cause for dukkha is there, therefore dukkha comes. The cause could be for sukha. Let us stay with the stock market only. So stock market grows. I have a set of blue chip stocks and their value has grown. Therefore, just by looking at the newspaper, I become happy. So there is a nimitta. Why are you happy? There is a nimitta. There is a cause for happiness. And then the opposite also. Why are you so dejected by looking at the newspaper? Because there is a cause for the unhappiness. The stock market has dipped. Therefore, I am unhappy. So it could be there is a nimitta that is there. This nimitta is often brought by destiny. We evoke a destiny to account for the nimitta of sukha and dukkha. Destiny brings, especially this stock market going up and down, it is purely controlled by destiny only. Because even economists don't know how it happens. They created it and now they don't know how it functions. Why it functions, the way it functions, it is beyond anybody's understanding. Economists, they just talk of a pattern and all that. Really, they cannot know what is going to happen to that. It is a phantom created by us only, by human being only. Bhagavan has not created stock market. Only human being has created stock market, and now he doesn't know how it is going to behave. And the people who create it, they are always surprised by its behavior. Very interesting. So, this is how human life goes on. Anyway, so there is a nimitta. You may evoke destiny. I am not sure how far we can evoke destiny for these things also, but still you may evoke destiny. That is what I was trying to say. But let us assume that destiny has brought the cause of sukha or the cause of dukkha that is there. It is the first factor in a series of events. The second factor is that the sukha nimitta or dukkha nimitta is perceived by us. And accordingly, you should know it, you know. You cannot be unhappy or happy about something which you do not know. You have to know it to become happy or unhappy. That is the primary precondition. So what is this knowing? Knowing of the outside cause for happiness or unhappiness. Knowing means the mind modifies accordingly. The mind knows sukha in terms of the cause of sukha, and therefore now mind is modified into a given state called cheerfulness. So sukhakara vritti we call it. And when there is the cause of unhappiness, the mind becomes the opposite. Mind gets the opposite modification. It is morose or it is in pain. So dukkhakara vritti we call it. So now there is sukha nimitta, cause of sukha and cause of dukkha before you. And then the sukha vritti, the dukkha vritti in the mind. It is like weather. Sukha vritti is like a sunny weather and dukkha vritti is like inclement weather. Up to that, it happens naturally. You can say it is destiny. Up to that it is destiny. Because you cannot help seeing what is there before you. You cannot help appreciating what is before you, whether it is sukha or dukkha. You have to appreciate it that way. You have to appreciate means you have to comprehend it that way. Up to that, it happens by the nature's laws. And then comes your role. There is a sukhakara vritti in the mind. And of course I am, and there is sukhakara vritti in the mind. The mind modification in the form of cheerfulness. Now happens an identification. You identify with that mind modification. Like even, you identify with the weather. You see, when you look at the weather, you cannot curse it unless you identify. In terms of like or dislike, any projection of a like or a dislike, it comes from a fundamental identification. Like or dislike projection is a reaction. And that reaction comes from prior identification. You have to identify this weather it is somehow connected to me. It is my weather. Why it is my weather? Because it is in the weather that I have to travel to New York. Therefore, a travel is before me. And therefore, my travel and the weather are connected. Therefore, it is my weather. That kind of an identification has to happen. Are you worried about the weather around Mars or Jupiter? No. You are worried or concerned about this weather only. Because there is an identification with reference to weather. And from that identification comes the idea of cursing the weather. So similarly, when the mind acquires a particular modification, you identify with it. We identify with the mental experiences, which is the wrong thing to do. You should not identify with the mental experience. You are not the mind. You are the witness of the mind. That space, that is what we talk about. Therefore, now you develop a space with reference to the mental modification. So now you say, my mind is happy. You have to say that. But unfortunately, I say, I am happy. Aham Sukhi. So this Aham Sukhi, we have a name for it. So I have given Sanskrit names to you for every step. So Sukha Nimitta is there. Sukha Vritti is there. That is the next step. The final step is Sukha Abhimana, we call it. I am the Sukhi. That is the identification. Identification is Abhimana. So, Sukha Nimitta is caused by destiny. Sukha Vritti is caused by nature's laws, the sense organs function and the mind functions. And the Sukha Abhimana is caused by ignorance. It is not caused by destiny or Ishvara. So, we talk of a Prarabdha. Prarabdha means we have done some bad karmas in the earlier life or in this life in the earlier times, and they are showing their results now. That is what we call Prarabdha. So this is what we call the law of karma. It is the law of karma operated by Bhagavan. We say all that. But then even Bhagavan, who is in the form of law of karma, or whom you can say as operating this law of karma, whichever way, even Bhagavan, he, based on the karma, creates the nimitta, sukha nimitta or dukkha nimitta, based on karma. And based on karma, you have a body and a set of senses and mind. Therefore, again the prarabdha karma, the earlier karma, it becomes the cause of the vritti, sukha vritti or dukkha vritti. There, the role of prarabdha ends. Prarabdha won't function any further. That means what? Prarabdha cannot cause you either pleasure or pain. It cannot cause you pleasure or pain. It can bring pleasure or pain to this level, in terms of nimitta first, and then vritti. Up to that, the jurisdiction of prarabdha works. And afterwards, ignorance takes over. And you have this habit of identifying with every mental experience. Why? I see a flower and identify with it. I like rose flower. This is rose. Rose is what? It's a name given by you. That means already the ground for identification is ripe. And then I like rose. When you say I like rose, it also means simultaneously that there are quite a few flowers which you do not like. And then because you like it, you want to pluck it and put it in the buttonhole. So many things follow. Liking. So, there is an identification. In a very subtle way, there is identification in every step of life. What to speak of identity? But here we are talking of an identification at the level of mind, which is very clearly recognizable. And so, suppose you step aside from the experiences of mind. Just, it is possible to do that. Just by witnessing the movements of mind, you can do that. It is as simple as that. But one has to do some practice about it. In fact, there is a statement which is quite often repeated by Mahatmas. Dhi vikriya sahasranam sakshyatoham avikriyaha. I am the witness of innumerable modifications of the mind. And hence, I myself am not modified. Whereas, in the case of a yo-yo response, the person, the I am, the core of the being is apparently modified by ignorance according to the movements of the mind. And therefore, when dukkha comes, he becomes udvigna, means agitated, he becomes nonplussed and very unhappy and anxious. And when sukha comes, he gets so much attached to that, sometimes the sukha can be a source of so much pain. That's why suppose somebody has hit a jackpot, some 5 million, 10 million, etc., they talk of jackpots. And so when a person gets jackpot, they don't break the news to him immediately. If he is doing some work and you go and tell him you got 10 million, he may drop dead because of that. This is what is called the paroxysm of pleasure. There is a paroxysm in pleasure, which is as dangerous as the paroxysm of pain. Paroxysm means intense agitation. You see, I know a number of people in India, so the cricket match is played between India and Pakistan. So when Kapil Dev made a century, we hear news. The news is like this: Kapil Dev made a century. That is one news. On hearing the news of Kapil Dev making a century, two people lost their life because they could not control their joy. That is the next news item. In the same news hour, that is the next item. So they were looking at the TV screen and they could not contain the joy that is overflowing in their heart because the fellow has made 100 runs. So it is the silliest thing. Him making is the silliest thing, we seeing is silliest, and then becoming like this is even further silliest. So, and then the person cannot contain the joy. That's why I said the paroxysm of pleasure is as much dangerous to the body and to the mind as that of pain. So, dukkheshu anudvigna manaha, sukheshu vigata spruhaha. So, we have to develop a response. This response, a proper response is, when prosperity visits us, we receive it with gratefulness towards Ishvara. By invoking Ishvara, things can become very easy. You have to invoke Ishvara. When adversity comes, when prosperity comes, you should straight away become grateful to Ishvara. So, it is Ishvara's grace. Of course, we say that Ishvara will give you prosperity according to your deserving it only. He won't just send prosperity out of his whims and fancies. Only when you deserve it, you get it. That much is certain. But still, Ishvara is recognized as karma phala data. So, the karma phala means the results of an action and that result of action coming and visiting you, we invoke Ishvara. Between karma and karma phala, bring in Ishvara. Ishvara is the one who sends us prosperity. He chooses the time and occasion for giving prosperity to us. And so in this understanding, we become immediately grateful to Ishvara. So that sense of gratitude to Ishvara, which is nothing but devotion, the devotion, it helps to mellow this yo-yo response in prosperity. The same thing in adversity also, what we call prasada buddhi, quite often we talk of it. So prasada buddhi, so we receive the adversity once again from Ishvara. You see, pleasure is the divine, we recognize that. Pleasure is the grace of the God, it is divine. Then pain is also equally divine. It's not that pleasure is divine and pain is caused by satanic, etc. There is nothing like that. So pleasure and pain are equally divine. And so suffering also, we accept it as divine. It comes because everything comes from God. So in this understanding, we can mold our response to the situations of life. But suppose you find it difficult to respond properly to pleasure and pain in life. You find some difficulty in that because, you know, mind doesn't function by knowledge. Mind functions by habit. We all know Gita. That is okay. Who doesn't know Gita? In a given situation, everybody knows Gita. But everybody doesn't function or operate according to the knowledge. They operate according to their vasanas, their innate tendencies or impressions or whatever. Because mind doesn't function by knowledge. You have to train the mind carefully. Then only the correlation between knowledge and activity, it takes place. Otherwise, knowledge is in its level, activity or life is in another level. You have to train it carefully. If knowledge has to make mind calm, then long back, Tattvamasi, one first lecture itself, we should have become calm and nice. That doesn't happen. Anyway, so one has to carefully train the mind. So if you find a difficulty in molding a proper response towards the event of life, then an advice is given. You go into the company of Mahatmas. So because a Mahatma, he seems to be like a bulwark against these ups and downs of life. And in his company, the mind's innate tendencies, they will temporarily take a back seat. And therefore, your response becomes more mellowed and more appropriate. That's why when there is an occasion of joy, you invite the Mahatma to your house. When there is the opposite, you yourself go to the Mahatma. Or you can do it the other way also, whichever is practical and meaningful. So the company of Mahatmas is very useful in that way. We have to make use of it that way. You have to be conscious of its utility, its usefulness, and make use of it that way. So that way, we have to develop a proper response towards sukha and dukkha. We'll come back to it. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om Tatsat Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.